This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live there.
What is going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 122 of Within the Trenches, a podcast based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher. Now, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/trenches. Now, I've been using this for a while, and then I ended up switching over to some NPR stuff, and then I switched back to Audible because there are so many good things there. I just started a new book, actually. It's 11-22-63 by Stephen King, and it was actually recommended to me a few weeks ago when I was at the Illinois conference. So this was recommended to me by a public safety friend out of Effingham County there in Illinois, and the story revolves around...
Did you know in Effingham they serve effing eggs?
Are you serious? Nice. So now when Audible checks my intro advertisement for this, they are going to, hopefully they laugh. But anyway, this story revolves around the JFK assassination. And anyone who knows me knows that this whole incident interests me like no other. It's been a great story so far. I don't want to give a lot of information about it. You'll have to check it out yourself. Otherwise, you can check out over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Remember that to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/trenches. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trenches for your free audiobook. And also, as always, this episode is sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Thank you, Rob. Now, I've always said that the interruption. Yes. Good stuff. A few things to update really quick before we get to Rob being, himself.
Rude.
An update. You know, the last episode that I ended up having, I talked to all of you about this inner ear issue that I've been having that has caused episodes of vertigo, and I'm still kind of dealing with that. I'm on the mend. I think it's around December 27th will be 2 months since this started, and I should be, from what I was told, I should be fully recovered by then. If not, someone has some explaining to do. But otherwise, I'm on the mend. I'm getting better. Also, an update on the vinyl decals. Hashtag IM901 decals are up for sale at my Etsy store, as well as Dispatch Love. There's Daughters of Dispatch and Sons of Dispatch as well. All those decals are available. An update on the movement and Project IM901. We are still sending out stories daily, as well as pictures of dispatchers within the dispatch center. So make sure to check those out. Facebook.com/Within the Trenches Podcast. And an update on the IAED, as well as the Within the Trenches Continuing Education Scholarship. Tomorrow, I will be posting up the link for the application. Tomorrow will be December 2nd. So you will be able to go online to thejabberlog.com and apply for this second scholarship that I'm giving out to the 2017 Navigator Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, what comes with that scholarship? Well, it'll be a full registration, as well as a choice of one pre-conference class. You will get a $500 travel stipend, as well as an official Within the Trenches t-shirt, and you'll be a guest on the show. So big things there. Make sure to check that out. And now for my guests, because one of them, who's being a dick, cannot wait to get on and talk. My guests today are Jennifer, a dispatcher with Ogle County Sheriff's Office out of Illinois, and show regular Rob Big Mac McMullen, who's the director of Vigo County out of Indiana and the first VP of NENA. How's it going?
It's awesome.
Hey, guys.
Oh, man. So it's good to have you on, Jennifer.
Oh, thanks. I'm pumped. I've never done this before, so... Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no, not a problem. Now we did have, a presentation that we gave at the Illinois mm-hmm. conference that I've been talking about. And, that was a lot of fun. now
did you mind that I introduced you as my friend, Richie?
No, not at all. I thought that was pretty good.
Okay.
No, it was very good because my parents still call me Richie and one of my favorite movies is La Bamba. And my brother and I, the other day, actually got into this meme conversation where we were sending back and forth through text message memes from, there were pictures of the scenes from the movie La Bamba, and they're, I don't know, it was really stupid, but it was funny. So one of the pictures and one of the scenes actually at the end of the movie, Richie's brother is yelling Richie very loud, so it made me laugh too, because I thought about when you introduced me as Richie, so it all turned out good. Now that's one thing that Rob has not called me. He's called me Ricky, but not Richie.
Nah, I don't call you Richie. Ricardo.
Exactly. Yes, that's usually what you call
but
me.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for including me in that, guys. It was great.
Yeah, and we were talking before we got started here, and you had said that you actually learned a lot with some of the stuff that Rob was saying, because usually Rob just talks shit, so you don't really learn anything from him.
I was shocked, yes. Well, you know, I do what I can. It's all good.
Yeah, it's all fun and games. Now, when we were there, was that the first time that you two had met, or did you guys know each other from a different conference, or was that just the beginning?
We actually met last year at the Illinois conference, I believe, wasn't it, Jen?
That's right. Yes.
Yes. And she determined that I had a Southern accent and said I sounded like I was from the South. So she started calling me Tex.
Nice.
Yes. So
that's not debatable. You do have an accent.
Whatever.
You know, he does. I can actually hear it. As he was saying that, I can hear that.
I do not have an accent.
Just a little more feminine, though.
Yes. I do not have an accent. You guys are crazy. I don't like it.
Analyst.
Stop.
So, see, that's funny then. So you guys met a year ago, and you were just telling me about her this year. Thanks a lot, dude. We could have done many more episodes.
Well, yeah, okay.
You know, I think I do remember you telling me. What was that?
Yes.
That I'm a well-kept secret.
I don't want to tell everybody my secrets.
That's right. I think I do remember, though, at a conference later on in the year, you had said that somebody was calling you Tex. I'm pretty sure I remember you telling me a story about that.
Yep, she called me Tex. And when I would get emails or messages from her, it was always like, hey, Tex. I'm like, God, would you freaking stop? I do not sound like I've got a Southern accent. So,
wow.
Okay.
You guys are crazy.
So, okay. So we call you Big Mac and she calls you Tex. So we have to find a way to combine that.
Hmm.
Like the big Tex bacon burger or something.
Oh, that sounds so delicious right now.
Oh, man. Ooh. Big Mac with barbecue sauce. Shit.
Did you just moan?
No, actually, that was a groan.
Okay.
I thought what he was saying,
it was
too.
A groan, not a moan.
I thought, damn, she likes barbecue sauce. Shit. Okay, well... So the first part of this is going to be, we're going to focus on Jennifer here, because I want to know, well, for one, how long have you been working in 911 then, and how did you get into it?
I've been at my current job for 3.5 years. I was a paramedic for 15 years. And I kind of thought that I needed to have a little something to fall back on. So I started dispatching for my own agency part-time. So I'd have something else to do because I was kind of looking at starting to have a family. So I started doing that probably like 10 years ago. And then 3.5 years ago, I decided that was it for being a paramedic. And I was offered a job here at Ogle County Sheriff's Office. And I've been here ever since, loving it and have not looked back one minute.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, what made you switch from being a paramedic to coming into, you know, the chair?
Honestly, I was just over it. Like, I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to keep up with the education. I had, you know, little kids. I didn't want to keep up with, I was a critical care paramedic, and I did not want to take the time that it took to keep up with the education. And I was away from them for 24 hours. At a time. So I wanted to do something, but I really had no other skills, really. Mm-hmm. I started, you know, paramedicine when I was 18 years old. So one of my girlfriends worked down there and said, hey, you should apply. She knew I was kind of dispatching part-time. So it worked out. It was great. It was an answer to my prayers.
Now, that's one of the things that people don't understand is that when you get into public safety, you pretty much lose a lot of what's going on with your family at home.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And even in dispatch, I mean, you've got 12 to however many hours afterwards, if you're doing mandatory OT or if you're getting forced in, you know, you're missing a lot of stuff that's going on. And I know there's been a lot of, you know, holidays that, you know, I ended up missing or, you know, family functions or something. It got to the point where there was so much that I was doing or so much that, you know, work that I was doing in dispatch that my family in Michigan, they didn't invite me anywhere anymore because my answer was always no. And I don't mean my immediate family. I mean my extended family. They would invite my family, my wife and kids and I to, you know, a lot of the barbecues and stuff because I was always working. And I remember getting kind of annoyed about it. And I was talking to my wife and she goes, what would you say if they would have asked you? I said, well, I would have said no, because I got to work. And she goes, well, you know, kind of think about it that way. And I thought, ah, damn, of course you're right.
No, but it's true though. I mean, somebody has to be sitting in that chair 24 hours a day. So yeah, you're right.
What was it like when you first started? Because you're coming from being a paramedic. Did you sit in dispatch for a while or had you done that before just to see what it was like in general or how'd that come about?
It's like, makes me think of a story probably right when I got started in dispatch or on the ambulance. There was kind of a struggle between dispatchers and the fire department. Like, oh, the dispatchers are idiots. You know, like they don't ever give us this information or blah, blah, blah. So I kind of took it upon myself one day to go sit in dispatch and see what was going on. And then I wanted to know what was happening behind the scenes, why we weren't getting information, which was for a very good reason because the dispatchers weren't getting it. But So even a long time ago at the beginning of my career, I kind of tried bridging the communication struggle that we can sometimes have with our customers, the fire department, law enforcement, ambulances. So, I kind of had a clue what it was about. Like I said, I dispatched for a private ambulance service. So I had some inkling, but coming over to police, fire, and EMS, it was an eye opener. I would drive home in complete silence, no radio, no phone calls, nothing. Just I needed silence in my head. So it was pretty overwhelming at first. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just trying to find a way to decompress in any way possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just so much information, you know, going in, so much noise that I just needed that 20 minutes after shifts.
So how big is the center that you work at?
We have 5 positions. We always have 2 staffed and we have a 3rd cover. So it's relatively small. We we manage pretty well, though. We do everything. Police, fire, and EMS, leads. We have a nuclear plant here in Ogle County, so we take care of, you know, that stuff, the emergency lane for that stuff. So we do everything in our center. So we stay pretty busy, although we're pretty small. I think our county is maybe around maybe 55,000 or so.
Hmm.
And we have, we dispatch for 14 fire departments and seven law enforcement agencies.
So do you ever do any drills or anything for that power plant?
Oh yes. Those are a big deal. I'm not directly involved in that. Mm-hmm. We have a lady, my partner, actually, it's a pretty big deal. They do that. Yes.
I only ask because, when I was in dispatch, we had our EOC, within the same building. And, I was looking at a map and I saw these, different, radius, circles, this mm-hmm. different amount from the actual power plant. And I remember I remember them telling us, well, I asked them, I said, I live in Holland. I said, I live in the north side of Holland. So if that thing were to go off, I said, how long would I have to make it out of the death zone? And he goes, you would have probably like 10 minutes. And I said, my city is like four cities away though. I said, and it's far. And he goes, yeah, you'd be dead. Or you would be stuck in the highway trying to get away. I thought, damn,
yeah,
that sucks.
Yep, it's true. We have evacuation routes for every direction out of the county. And they send out information every year on what to happen during a radiological emergency to all the residents. So I think we're pretty well prepared down here in Ogle County.
Man, well done. So yeah. When you first started out dispatching, then was it, you said that when you would get done and you would go home, you'd go home pretty much in silence. But when you very first started, what was the training like for you? Was it overwhelming or was it kind of easy because you had been doing some dispatching for a private ambulance, or was there a big difference?
I think the CAD system was okay. It didn't take me too long to figure that out. Leeds actually was a struggle for me to figure out all of Leeds' little nuances.
For all of the listeners out there, Leeds is the Illinois equivalent to your NCIC.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So like it's all the Warrens, all the missing people, tagged and towed cars. It's that database.
Cool.
It was okay. I had to get used to hearing 14 things at once and being able to document them and remember them and respond to them. So that was the most overwhelming part, was all the information that was coming in. Yeah.
See, that was one of the things for me as well. When I first got started, originally when I very first started, I was at a small police department, but when I ended up moving back home to Michigan, Allegan County Central Dispatch, where I continued and then ended my dispatch career there, I had to do the same thing. So when I came in, we had five consoles, three were staffed, four was, if we had extra, and that fifth one was usually for the supervisor. We would be able to get through with just three all the time. But I remember coming in and sitting there and just listening and observing rather. And all the seasoned veteran dispatchers are there doing everything at once. They're on the phone. They're typing in a complaint. They're also answering the radio. They're eating food at the same time. And yes. I thought, how the hell am I going to do that? Right. Yeah.
Worry.
Like, shit, he is the father.
He's not the father. No.
Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
Oh, geez. Yes. So all of that stuff going on at one time, that was overwhelming too. But, you start doing it and then after a while, it's like basic. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, Tex. What about chime in here?
Yeah, when you were doing it, but was it overwhelming when you first started, or
with your ADHD issues, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly. If he had a phone at that time, it would have been hard for him to do anything.
Yeah, it started. I mean, I had gone to college for criminology, and my whole mindset was I'm going to be a cop. And then I went to do my internship one day because I had done my internship all summer and went in there on a night, and they're like, "Hey, would you like to?" Well, actually, there was a deputy working radio, and I'm like, "What are you doing here?" He's like, "Because I was supposed to ride with him." He's like, "Well, would you want to be a dispatcher?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, that'd be cool." He's like, "Well, they just had fired somebody, so."
So they wanted you to come in.
That was your job?
They fired him and they're like, "Yeah, okay, here you go. This is, we want you to dispatch." I'm like, "Okay."
Oh.
So yeah, that was the whole thing. And I mean, it was small county, 17,000 people and basically one position, one horse town. So I was the only person on the night shift. So it's like, this is it. So
big fish in a little pond, just like you like it.
Pretty much. So, that was basically it. And it was pretty overwhelming. I mean, I didn't know what to do, but.
How many times did you cry?
How many times I cried? I didn't ever cry.
Come on now.
I didn't, I swear. But the training was like nothing. There was absolutely no training at all. It was like, okay, just watch for a little bit and then you're good to go. Cause we didn't have CAD.
Here's a pencil and paper.
Yep. And basically here, and actually it was just a notebook. It was a, college ruled 5-subject notebook. And it said radio dates from, I started on September the 18th and it said September 1st through whatever date to the last page in paper was. And we didn't have a CAD. So it was, you wrote everything down in the notebook, under the logbook, and at 22:50, 61:44, which was me, on duty, 61:43 off duty. And we wrote down, officer made traffic stop at this location and want to run a 27 or run a license plate or driver's license check at this time, return to this person. And that was it. I mean, that was our CAD and that was our case management and everything.
Man.
Our course we had.
How long ago was that, Rob?
This was in 1998. So in 98, we had no, like I said, we didn't have any 911. So everything was roll route addresses. So when you roll route addresses.
Roll route addresses?
Yeah, okay, so like roll route.
You don't have an accent. Go ahead.
Roll route addresses. So it's like, what's your address? Roll route 1, box 134A. And it's like, how do you get there? Oh, well, you got to drive down to, the tree in the road, turn left, and it's the fifth house on the right. I mean, those were how we give directions.
There was no MapQuest, yo? I mean, it was 98. Yeah.
Dude, we didn't even have we didn't have internet. We didn't have any of that stuff.
I had internet in 95.
We didn't even have a computer, dude. It was handwritten. We didn't get a computer in dispatch until.
Was this Hazard County or what?
Yeah, pretty much. We didn't get a computer in dispatch until 2000. We were using, when we moved to our new facility in October of 98, we were using a typewriter.
Your sheriff was Roscoe Picol trained.
It was, dude. It was, we had a typewriter and that's what our log was. We moved from the notebook to a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper on the typewriter. That was our CAD.
It doesn't seem that like 98 should be that long ago to not have this type of equipment.
I know.
You shouldn't be, but we didn't get 911 until 2003.
Wow.
This is Vigo County?
No, this was in Park County.
Oh, okay.
In Indiana still?
Yeah, it's just north of county. The county just north of me, where I grew up.
Wow.
Wow.
No, Vigo County got 911 in 92. They had it in 1992.
Snaps.
Yep.
That's pretty crazy, man. Small county. I guess so. Very.
That's it.
Man, so you had a lot of issues with your hands from writing so much.
Yeah, and my...
It's no wonder you walk around like a T-Rex.
Oh, if you've ever seen my handwriting, we know it's atrocious. So, yeah,
chicken scratch on crack. Bad. Man. So what was your first call, Jennifer? Do you remember?
I was trying to think about that, what my very first call was, and I don't remember. I remember my first really traumatizing call. I was still hooked up to another person. I was taking everything, but she was still hooked up to me, like minding her own business over there, probably playing Farm Hero Saga or something. and I took a 911 call, and the girl said, and I asked her the address of her emergency. She said, "It's not an emergency, but here's my address. I just need you to send the coroner to my house." I said, "Okay, what's going on, you know?" And she said, "As soon as I hang up the phone with you, I'm going to shoot myself, and I don't want my parents to come in and find me, so I'd like the coroner to come here and remove me before my parents get home." And I was like, they never covered this in any training.
Whoa.
So it was, yeah. So that was my first like really memorable call.
Now, did she hang up right away after that, or
no?
Or did you hear it happen?
She did hang up the phone before she followed through with it.
Thank you,
lady. My partner. Seriously. I mean, it really was heartbreaking. My partner jumped on really quick, like. And started talking to her, and we got police moving towards her really quickly, but still, she was going to follow through with what she wanted to do, and there was no swaying her whatsoever. And I think police were on scene within 3 minutes of the time she called us, and she was gone by the time they got there.
Man.
See, she was a younger person. I mean, you know, early 20s with a child, and just she had it. So it was pretty emotional.
You know, calls like that always make me wonder, what is it that has brought that person to that point? You know, you call 911, right. You speak to the dispatcher, and you tell them something like that. Or even when I was on a call with, you know, someone, and they're just talking through, and I'm trying to get this information from them, and trying to talk them out of it, but thinking in the back of my head, what happened to you? What damaged you enough?
Yeah, what is so bad?
Right, to make you want to do this. Mm-hmm. That's always fascinated me. And I don't mean that as like a bloodthirsty thing or you know, like I get off on that. Right. The curiosity just makes me wonder, like, why and how. Like, that's crazy stuff.
I mean, mental health issues are, I have to remind myself of this all the time. Mental health issues is an illness, just like a diabetes or seizures, you know, it's something that's treated. And I just like, sometimes want to say, stop being crazy, but just stop being crazy.
Right. Yeah.
Normal. See things normal, like a normal human being. But, so I have to remind myself quite a bit that mental health issues are real diagnoses, real illnesses. And sometimes these things are just out of control, out of the person's control. So, it's difficult.
So did you have a debriefing after that, or it wasn't enough for you to, you know, ask for some sort of debriefing, or, you know, did you want to talk to anybody, or how did that go down when you were done with it?
No debriefing. I didn't want to, like I said, you know, I've been a paramedic for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I seen just about everything, even though as soon as I say that, I'd see something even more hideous. But so I think that some of the stuff doesn't really bother me that much. It bothers me, but not to the point where I think I need some help. Now, I don't know if I might eventually get to that call. My father-in-law always says that, you know, you have a bucket that just keeps filling up and you never know when it's going to spill over. It can just be, you know, anything that just sends you over the edge. And I've seen that before with some people that I've worked with, just like the simplest thing, you know, and just sends them over the edge and they need to let it out. So, but I'm good so far.
So then Okay, so I got a question then, especially because you were coming from a paramedic background to dispatching. That call that you remember was one of your first traumatizing ones, and any other traumatizing call that you've taken, what is it like now taking these calls and only being able to help with your words, where before you were actually able to do hands-on work? Has it been harder?
Yeah. I think yes and no. Some of the times I am extremely grateful that I don't have to be there and I don't have to be hands-on and do that work. And then sometimes, like, I feel like, oh, I could just get in my car. I could just hang up this phone right now and get in my car and be there in 2 minutes and help this mom, or, you know, help. So I struggle with both. It is a feeling of helplessness being in that chair and not being able to physically help somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, when people are hysterical and screaming, you know, really the only thing you can do is just try to get their attention. You know, if I was there in front of them, I could, you know, put my hands on them and say, listen, look at this. Look at me, you know, we need to deal with this. So that part does get frustrating at times. Yeah.
And I had to ask because it's something that I've always wondered. I've never been on a scene like that before. I used to ride with dispatchers a lot, or dispatchers with officers. I mean, when I worked in Florida, when I first started out, and then when I came back to Michigan, there were a few ride-alongs that I did, but I never got to get out. I was always in the car, so I didn't see anything firsthand like that. But then, you know, whenever I would take a phone call, it would bother me that there was nothing else that I could do. But mm-hmm. I mean, I was doing everything I could with what I had, all my resources, and I knew I was doing a good job. However, sometimes I just wanted to jump into that phone and, you know, domestic call, yeah. Stop whoever is the one who is, you know, being the ass at the time, and say, why don't you just chill out and just chill out. But, you know, you can't do that. So you coming from the other side into dispatching, I was curious how much of a difference there was when you were on hand or doing hands-on rather work than versus, you know, being on the phone.
Yeah, I definitely see both sides of it. Sometimes I'm grateful to be on the side of the phones, and sometimes it's really aggravating. So that's my answer.
So what about the technology that's, you know, starting to come out with, you know, come up with 911. I mean, the biggest thing that's been, you know, on the minds of everyone, a hot topic for at least the past 2 to 3 years has been text to 911. You know, how does that now change the whole dynamic of, you know, you're taking phone calls and in the background, you know, usually when you're taking a call, you're listening to every single thing. You're not just listening to that voice. You're listening to what's going on in the background, every little noise. And now you've got your screen and the typing.
Yeah, I don't know. We do not have that yet. Obviously, you guys talked about Texty at the conference, and I got to sit in there with you for that. And I thought that sounded great. I never really was sold on the texting, especially like texting to 911. But then listening to you guys talk, I was like, oh, this doesn't sound too bad. So, we don't have next gen yet. That would be, I think, later in 2017. So I'm not sure how the text to 911 is going to work. Rob, you said it's kind of like no big deal, right?
He actually just stepped out a minute. He just sent me a message right before you had asked that. So
Okay. Sorry about that.
No. Not a problem at all. He sent a Skype message over. I heard it go off and I thought, wait a minute. I was pretty sure that I put that on mute, which I didn't. So those who listen to this episode, they'll hear that little tone in the background. Oh, he had to go back into dispatch. Okay. Yeah, he had to go into dispatch really quick for a moment. And where his office is at is literally right like 10 feet or so or less from where he's at. So he's not far from the dispatch center. But for all the dispatchers that I've talked to that have worked with it, I've said that it's been easy. You know, it hasn't been a real big difference. However, it completely changes because, you know, your senses are listening, you know, you're so heightened to everything that's going on, but now,
right.
You know, you're typing, and it's not like when, you know, you're on radios and the person picks up a 911 call and you start hearing them type hard and fast and you know, okay, shit, this is a priority one.
Sure.
This is going to be something crazy. You know, you've got that dispatch typing.
I know what kind of mood she's in by the sound of the keyboard. So yeah, absolutely. You know exactly what's going on by the sound of the keyboard. Yeah.
Right. So if, I mean, I guess in that sense, at least within the dispatch center, if someone gets a text to 911 and they're typing that way, you know, something crazy is going on. However, coming from the other end, you can't tell how fast they're typing on their phone. You can't. I mean, some of those emojis don't come through. So, but can you imagine, though, taking a call, right, with somebody who, you know, someone just broke in and they send in someone just broke into my house with a scared emoji. Like, oh, this person's scared right now. Or they send the pizza slice one and you're like, wait, what? What's going on here? So Rob actually just came back on. Rob,
welcome back, Tex.
Thank you.
So Jennifer asked a question just a little bit ago, like right after you stepped out. And she was just wondering how texting has been for you guys. Because what we were talking about is how the dynamic now has changed where, you know, before we're listening in the background on the phone calls to hear different things, to know what is going on. However, now with texting, it takes that part, that element away from the phone call because now it's just text.
It does, definitely. But I think that's just the wave of the future. It's the, you know, no different on the, you know, on the work side as it is the personal side. When, you know, when you get a text from somebody, you can't tell, unfortunately, you can't tell sarcasm when you get a text or when somebody's bullshitting you or anything like that. So it's just kind of, that's the, I think that's the world we're moving to. You're unable to tell those emotions.
Yeah, you're definitely right. My cell phone bill comes and I have 19 phone calls, but I've only used 12 minutes.
Right. Exactly.
But I have 2000 text messages. So yeah, you're right.
So, you know, it's just, it's the same way as like you get a text from somebody and like, are you kidding? I don't understand. What is this? Oh no, I was just kidding you. Well, sorry. I can't see the sarcasm, you know, there's no sarcasm text or no sarcasm font, which there should be. But
oh, that is a great idea.
I think it would be like in italics.
Right. Yeah.
I think it would be like,
that's what I would say too.
It would be italics, but instead of it going like leaning to the right, it would be leaning to the left, I think.
Ah.
I think that's what it should be.
Or you can just throw in a pissy looking emoji in there or something.
You could. Or a laughing emoji.
Yeah.
Somebody should make a laughing emoji. Has that been done yet? A laughing emoji?
Yeah. It's like the
okay, the come on, come on. Jeez. So proud.
Come on, Rob. Sad trombone. Wah wah. yeah, it's definitely changed completely. And especially when, you know, video gets added in there. Oh man, that's going to be even more crazy. Dispatch centers are going to now have, virtual reality headsets where you can see everything that's going on.
That'd be awesome.
No way. No way.
How nuts would that be?
I am not down with that one at all. I am not down with video coming into the radio room.
No right. Way. Especially if you have a frequent flyer, someone who's just being a jerk and, you know, just wants to get on video chat to send wiener shots or something. That's not going to be good.
Ain't impressed, buddy. Put it away.
It's the dick pic guy.
Woo! Oh, man.
I promise you that's not that impressive. So.
So. I mean, as long as they're still getting, you know, prosecuted and stuff for abuse of 911.
Yeah.
Then again, those people probably don't care either if they keep getting thrown in jail or fined or whatever. But it's definitely going to be crazy when video comes in.
Oh, I'm not looking forward to that one. Text, yes. Video, no. Dicey. You know, very dicey.
A few years ago, there was actually a mock-up video that someone had done for Google Glass when that was first coming out. And one of the examples in this mock-up was for 911. And it showed the video and, you know, someone had fallen or some shit. I don't remember exactly, but I remember seeing it and thinking, man, that's actually kind of cool if you can do that. And I wanted to sign up. Actually, I was still in dispatch during that time. I wanted to sign up. It was towards the last half of my career in dispatching. And I wanted to sign up to get one of those headsets just so that I could test it out and see how it would work. You know, do my own mock-ups and everything, but I never went through with it. And then thinking about it later, I thought, I don't want to see that shit.
No way.
My imagination is worse probably than seeing it.
Just seeing people's homes that they don't take care of, or like naked, dirty babies running around in the background. I mean,
I'm glad you said babies.
I don't know. I just, even like domestics are sometimes pretty difficult for me to hear. Like, it just is in your ear hole and you can't get away from, you know, the screaming and the rage.
It's in my ear hole.
Seriously, like, oh.
Well, yeah, now you'd be able to see who has the weapon. To
see that, see any part of it.
Right. Instead of yelling at somebody, not so much yelling, but instead of speaking to someone firmly to tell them to put the weapon down tell them to put the weapon down or whatever, now you're going to get to see it. And if a strike happens, well, now you're definitely going to be going to court, because I've been to court before just for listening to it, because, you know, technically I'm a witness to it. And now you would actually see the assault happen and your ass would be in court for that whole time.
But just how traumatizing that is for the person, for us having to, I don't know. It's just crazy. I can't even believe it.
Dispatch centers better up their game for mental health and wellness for dispatchers.
Honestly, yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, with that said, there's a news story that I want to play here. And this was something that happened on November 17th at about 4:33 a.m. This was in Montgomery County. This was in Indiana. And this is just part. I don't think they play the whole thing. Maybe there's just a couple snippets in here. I did watch it before and now I can't remember. But there was a couple snippets from this actual 911 tape. And this is from Fox 59. And I'm getting it off of their website here. And just the title of it alone, it says, a chilling 911 call from Montgomery County mother. And in quotes, I just stabbed myself and killed my two children. So I'm going to play this and we're just going to discuss it a little bit here.
November 17,
2016, 4:33, 21. Montgomery County 911,
where's your emergency? And actually, that is the tape there. The one that I wanted to play is in a different link. So I'm not going to play that other one because it's too long. And I wanted to play this one because the executive director of the Indiana 911 statewide board, he was on this one and he actually gave some kudos to dispatchers and especially the dispatcher who had taken this call. So I'm going to switch it to this one instead, not the other one. And again, this is from Fox 59. And here we go.
First time we are hearing the chilling 911 call made by a local mother who admits she killed her two young children. Randy Worley pleaded not guilty to murder today in court. A mother from Darlington, Indiana, told dispatchers she stabbed her 7-year-old son and 3-year-old daughter because of a pending divorce.
Fox 59's Jill Glazlin has the latest tonight from Montgomery County. Jill?
The call came in here to the county's 911 center about 4:30 in the morning. It quickly became clear something horrific was happening on the other end.
Hey, what's going on there?
I stabbed myself and I killed my two children.
You stabbed yourself and killed your two children?
Mm-hmm.
We knew this call existed. Now we're hearing it. 29-year-old Brandy Worley calling from her home in Darlington saying her kids, 7-year-old Tyler and 3-year-old Charlie, are dead.
And what caused you to do this today?
My husband wanted a divorce and wanted to pick my kids. I won't let him find my kids.
Worley is without emotion as she talks to a dispatcher for about 6 minutes. He stays remarkably calm, asking questions, trying to figure out what's going on.
What are you feeling right now? Wait, are you tired? Are you worried?
Yeah, I took a lot of the medicine.
Worley's mom arrives at one point. She hands her the phone. The dispatcher asks her to check on the kids, and she becomes distraught. We've decided not to play that very difficult portion of the call. For 15 minutes, the Montgomery County dispatcher is asking questions, trying to help. It's hard to imagine being in that position.
Telecommunicators are often the overlooked part of public safety. We like to say they are the first of first responders.
Barry Ritter, head of Indiana's 911 board, says dispatchers are not only the first to deal with trauma, they're then disconnected from it quickly. That's why this year the state started offering stress resilience training. Many counties are beefing up mental health services for their dispatchers. In this case, the dispatcher managed to get so much information from Worley, despite all that he was hearing. Ritter says that's what dispatchers are trained to do, no matter what's happening on the other end of the phone.
They do a phenomenal job in the area of public safety, and they're that unseen hero in first responders.
Worley is being held in jail without bail. I'll have more of that call and what she told the dispatcher coming up tonight at 11 on NewsPoint. In Crawfordsville, Joel Glavin, Fox 59 News.
That is tough.
I called the director of their 911 center, which Darlington is a little bitty podunk town of, I don't know, less than 1,000, I would say. And so I text the director up there. I'm like, are you guys okay? Do you need anything? She was like, Rob, this isn't supposed to happen here. I was like, I understand that, you know, and she's a very good friend of mine. And I could just tell that she was beside herself. And, you know, you don't know what to do. It's just one of those things. We had the same thing happen, you know, when we had an officer that was killed in the line of duty. And a few months after I started working down here in Terre Haute, and it's like, this isn't supposed to happen here. This isn't, you know, I don't know what to do. And so I offered, you know, our department chaplain if they needed help. And she said, no, the sheriff was already arranging stuff for their dispatchers. So he was on the ball. So they were getting the help that they needed very quick for those folks. So I was glad to hear that. So.
Yeah, man, it's definitely a hard one. That first clip that I had clicked on that I thought was the one that I had just played. That one is just over seven minutes long. I think the call was actually about 16 to 17 minutes long. But just those 7 minutes, those first 7 minutes, holy crap, man. That was, it's pretty much the way the news put it. It was chilling. My hat is off to the dispatcher who took that call. He remained completely calm. He got all the information he needed to. He did an excellent job. At one point, you know, you can hear a little tweak in his voice, but man, who wouldn't have some sort of, you know, tweak in their voice? You gotta, when you're taking a call like that, you have to, in the back of your head, just, you're cool, you're all right, just do what you gotta do, you know, do your job, and then, you know, break down later if you have to, or take a break or something. But just listening to it, man, that mom, she is calm as she is. Well, I mean, she took a bunch of Benadryl. So, I mean, I guess I can see where she was being, you know, kind of the way her voice sounded. But geez, in the tape as well, the other one, the dispatcher asked where her husband is, and her husband is downstairs in the basement, not even knowing. Well, from what it sounded like, he didn't know what had happened yet, because he was downstairs and she was upstairs. And I guess her, you know, she calls her mom and her mom is the one who checks on it. That part I didn't hear. I haven't heard the entire tape. I only know about how long the length was only because of that 7-minute clip. They have an explanation in there about how long it is. But in the call, the husband did not even know yet what had happened. So it's freaking nuts, man. It just people are crazy.
Unbelievable.
So
you have that emotion of dealing with that stress from that lady calling, and then as a dispatcher, when you know that the husband is downstairs and hasn't found out yet, like, then you have like all these scene safety issues that would be going through your head.
Right,
like,
exactly.
What happens when this guy finds out? And oh man.
Yeah, especially and in that other clip, she actually said the dispatcher asked where the knife is at, and I don't remember what she says because she kind of mumbles it. And then there are a couple times where he can't understand her either because of the amount of Benadryl she took. She's just mumbling, but I mean, she's just like cold, you know, just speaking. No change in the voice.
Monotone. No,
yeah.
No inflections. Yeah.
Right. It's freaking nuts. And what's worse, or at least for me, personally, is looking at these online, you know, checking out the news story, and they show the pictures of the two kids. And it's like, damn, like, I can't imagine. I mean, what was she thinking? Just she didn't want her husband to have the kids. What? So fight for them too, then, you know?
Mm-hmm. I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Ugh. Oh, geez.
Terrible.
So they're the same age.
Yeah. People are crazy.
And it seems like a lot of those calls, the harder calls like that are always the ones that, you know, that involve kids. It sucks.
Oh, yeah, of course. For sure. Yeah, right? For everybody. That's everybody's worst nightmare.
Faux show.
So, Rob, you had said that you had reached out to them already and they're getting stuff situated.
Yeah, as soon as that happened, I was actually in training or in a meeting or something today, and I saw a friend of mine who used to be a dispatcher up there and worked for the fire department in Crawfordsville saying, you know, prayers to the dispatchers and those folks. And I'm like, well, what's going on? And then I did some Google, and then I'm like, oh shit. So I reached out to them, said, hey, what can we do? Is there anything that you need? And she said, no, they had it all under control. And the sheriff was, you know, stepping up and taking care of it for them. And they got getting what they needed. So yeah, they were doing what they needed to.
Awesome.
Nice little community we have here, right? Everybody trying to reach out to one another. And
like I said, the director and I have been friends for a long time, and she was a mentor with me within my Indiana Nina career. And so she's just a super good friend of mine, and I was doing anything that I could to reach out to them. So
yeah. And that's a good thing to have, excuse me, our family and public safety like that, because they're, you know, with all of this stuff that's been going on, and I'm not trying to throw a plug in for anything here, but the whole I Am 901 movement, everybody who got involved, I mean, it shows how much, you know, PTSD is real. And with a call like this, that person might end up suffering because of that call. But to have, you know, their director, you know, everything that you're doing, Rob, or other dispatchers around there to help that person out, or anyone in general who is taking a call like that, that's why we need to have people like that available, and, you know, to be strong and help that way, and not, you know, shy away from it, because it's something that needs to be talked about and needs to be dealt with. And, you know, PTSD absolutely is a big thing.
I think that's one of like the greatest things about these conferences is the networking and all the people that you meet and that you can reach out to, or they can reach out to you. I mean, it's just amazing.
I fully agree. And Rob has done many, many things. This dude has met so many different people, from traveling around to different conferences. And I'm lucky enough to be able to tag along sometimes with some of the people that he meets, that I can bring him on here and share more stories. So it's always good to have a strong network.
It is true. It's funny, you know, you and I travel a lot of the same circuit with with my Nina responsibilities and your job responsibilities. So we try to, you know, always hook up when we go to those shows. And how many new people have we brought on the podcast? It's kind of funny to think about that. How many new people have we brought on to talk about their story, to get it out there, to share, to get it off their mind? It's kind of crazy that how we've done that.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
We talk a lot of shit. We talk a lot of shit, and it's always fun. But, you know, we always do. It's a lot of, it is a good time.
Yeah, I mean, this is episode 122, man.
Wow. Rocking right along.
Hell yeah. You know,
I got involved with that on episode 55.
Dang, we've been blazing since then.
Yep.
That's right.
Awesome.
Now, Indiana Nina, that's going to be coming up in, it'll be April. I think it's like the middle of April, is it? Or
middle, second week of April, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm going to be at the Navigator Conference.
Are you going, Richie?
Oh, I'll be there.
You will. If you need a Siri voice to read texts, let me know.
Oh, snaps.
I'll pop over.
Well, and that would be pretty good, because as far as I know, I'm going to be doing, I believe I'm going to be giving two different classes. One of them is going to be on the I Am 901 movement. There's something that I have planned for that. But there's also going to be a live episode, which last year was the first, actually the only time so far that I've done a live episode where, and when I mean live, I mean with a live audience. And Rob was up there with me on stage for a panel, and then a couple of friends of ours, assistant director in Montgomery County, and then dispatcher out of, was it Fayette County? Fulton, my bad, Fulton.
Fulton County, yeah.
Yes, and we had all kinds of fun. I don't know how many people were in there. There was a lot of people in there.
It was packed. We had, you know, our conference is nothing like the Illinois conference. But, I mean, for us, I think we had, you know, 120 people in there, easy. And it was packed. It was fun. People were rolling. It was so much fun.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, if you end up coming to the Indiana Nina Conference, you should be on that panel with us.
Okay. All right. Keep me posted.
Because then that will be a live episode.
It was a blast at the conference. I had a blast with you guys.
It would pretty much be the same thing. Anyway. Yeah, it would be almost the same thing as that presentation, except we're not talking about texting. But you would be sitting at the table with us and another person or two, and there would be two other microphones for the audience, and they would come up and they would tell dispatch stories. But the stories that they were telling were all funny stories, and some of them naughty, I guess I would say.
Okay. All right.
That's well, it. Okay. To give you an example, one of the people who had called in to 911 was saying that he had broken his dick.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Put it out there.
Oh, yeah.
Word. Go ahead. Yep.
That's why I always put in the beginning that there's the three A's of podcasting. So.
Yes. Okay.
So it'll be a lot of fun. There'll be a lot of different stories coming through, and it'll be a good time. So if you end up coming out, we'll have to have you on there with us.
I know when I was at the Illinois conference, I think a lot of the folks said that they would like to come over to the Indiana conference just to hang out, because we have a lot of fun. And you guys, the Illinois conference is always off the chart, man. It is. So this year was a blast. It's always
Rob,
a good time.
Did we dance for like 3 hours straight?
We did. It was amazing.
What?
So
killer.
Yeah, it was.
I missed that. Time.
So you did.
You guys did, man.
Hey, I hate to do it, but I've got to jet out of here. I got to go pick up Wyatt at school. So
no, not a problem at all. We're actually just going in
to the wrap up.
Yeah, we are going into the wrap up of this. So thank you very much, Rob.
Stitcher Radio and all that good stuff. I can't do it today. So.
It's a lot longer now that I have Audible.
I know. Jen, nice talking to you again. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, Tex. All right.
Bye, guys.
All righty. So, Jennifer, you can hang here with me for just a moment, but for everyone else, we're going into the wrap-up of this, and thank you very much, the both of you, for being on this episode. I appreciate it a lot. This is episode 122. We're going to mix up a little bit with this wrap-up, because now I have another sponsor here to thank, and of course, you know, as always, I would like to thank my sponsors, because they're the ones who help keep the show going, as well as, or especially the listeners. I mean, the listeners, you know, the people who have been writing in, sending me messages, the I Am 901 movement, all of the stories. We've got new stories that are being posted daily, as well as pictures for Project I Am 901. Keep those going. I haven't mentioned it in a while. I know I said it before a few times, and I posted it on Facebook and Twitter, but the OMB has not made their decision final yet for the reclassification issue from switching 901 professionals from clerical to the protective class. If I remember correctly, it'll be somewhere around April 2017 that they will make that final decision. So we are continuing to post stories. There are articles that are still going around about the movement and what it stands for, you know, showing the difference between dispatchers and clerical workers and commercial dispatchers. It's still going strong. Again, at the when this hit really high, and it's still pretty high up there, we were trending at number 3 on Twitter, and on Facebook the total engagements is 40 million engagements, and it's still going strong. People are still sharing these stories, so continue to send them in. My team and I are working through that. But again, for the sponsors, this episode is sponsored by Audible. Remember that to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/trenches. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trenches for your free audiobook, as well as your 30-day free trial. And as always, we're sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. If you have any questions, comments, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's at 901 Podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WithinTheTrenches Podcast. And this episode, as well as all the others, can be heard 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everyone.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.